Very good. This is one of the three last meetings. The last next week and the week after, we'll have useful things like dealing with stress and managing time, which is a very useful skill, definitely. That's next week. And then the last meeting is going to be focusing on ethics and some aspects of ethics, of course. Today, the plan is for something that we are never taught, actually. There are no courses and classes on this. And you may find it not yet very useful at the moment, because now you are students working in somebody's lab, your advisors, your mentors' lab. But very soon, once you graduate, you get your PhD, you will be supervising other people. You will have master's students working with you on their thesis. When you get your PhD, at some point, you will have also doctoral students. You may have programmers or other people working for you. So the question is, how can you be a good supervisor, a good boss? As I said, nobody taught me that. So the only thing I had was really just observing people around me throughout my life. And when I had people, at some point I had 10 people working for me. That was a lot. So I had to learn all of this myself. So today's meeting is on some of the observations that that I have made and that I would like to share with you, and hopefully they are going to be useful when you are a supervisor. Some students told me in the past that it was very useful for them in the current situation, observing their advisor, managing it. That's a kind of nice side effect. You can definitely try to influence your advisor, maybe with some of the ideas. Because I'm positive that your advisor has not taken a course on managing. Your advisor studies something technical and not things on management. Here's where we are. The blue things were either skipped or we have covered them. So we have guiding students running a lab, managing projects today. We have balancing life and then coping with stress next week, and then some aspects of ethics in the last meeting. Some introductory remarks and then some of my experiences. Again, not because my experiences are the best possible, but everybody has some experiences and things that I have learned over time. It's costly because you have to learn with your experiences, with the errors you make. So that's what I wanted to share with you, things that I thought are working and are useful. So good things that I learned, and then some warnings. A pitfall is, you know, you dig a hole, cover it so that you cannot see it, and somebody can fall into it. You can also fall in a pitfall, in a something that you were not anticipating, that were waiting there for you to make a mistake, to fall into the pitfall. Introductory remarks, this is actually an authentic picture. My second son, when they were scouting, it was one son at a time, I was once taking part in a fishing competition. The scouting club had a lake. I don't know if it was theirs or they rented it. And everybody got a boat, a father and a son, and we were fishing. And this is at the end. We came back after a whole day of fishing. As you see, my son is very proud of what we caught. There's not much in the net, but we caught a few fish. And we were very, very happy, and we were counting to be in the among the leaders of the fishing, of the competition. And then we learned that the winner caught, I forgot, it was definitely over 100 pounds, 120 or 130 pounds of fish. So, well, that was quite depressing. But the thing that the organizers said, okay, you are getting the reward for the first place, but the catch is that you need to tell how you did it. So that was funny. They had to tell what they did to catch 120 pounds of fish. That was a lot. They had to have bags of fish. In 1997, I was nominated by my students, and I got a reward that I was very proud of, really. I'm still proud of it. It was called Outstanding Mentor. It means that my students liked me, I guess, the way I ran the lab. They nominated me, and I was given the opportunity to give a talk on how I did it. So part of these slides is really the talk that I gave. I started with this slide, with a story about fishing. It wasn't us who won. We were really towards the end, as you see, there's not much fishing. Or maybe this is a picture that we took when we were going out. I don't remember. That was long ago. It was early, mid-1990s. So you have actually, if not this slide, you've seen the idea that mentoring in science is very important because we learn the best from other people. There's a lot to learn. The task of becoming a scientist is very difficult, so you learn from others. If you learn from others, then whatever the others are teaching you is important. So if you are the one teaching, you have a difficult task ahead of you and you should do it well. So that's important. An observation is that the best places to graduate study are ones that have very good scientists. So very, very good scientists are producing very good scientists too. It's a fact of life. So if you choose your place to do your doctoral studies, you should choose the best place that will accept you. And you can become very good anywhere, but this is definitely statistical law that is working. So a lot of things that people will learn from you, things that they observe in you, you need to be careful when they learn. I learned a lot from my mentors, definitely. I can even pinpoint the things that I have learned from each individual people. And you learn good and bad things. My primary advisor, Max Henyon, did things at the last moment. There was a deadline tomorrow. He often started late and did that very late. When you start late, you are very efficient. But on the other hand, you don't have enough time to make things very well, to do things very well. So I have unfortunately inherited it. And very often I start things late. And that's a bad thing I learned. But I learned also other many good things. So you have to do it alone. Nobody is teaching you that. So how do you do it? In the beginning, you kind of you don't know what to do. You are lost because nobody has taught you that. One thing that I definitely advise you is to forget about the points for your publication, forget about your promotion, habilitatia, etc., but focus on research, focus on publishing. Those rewards, the things that that will come, they will come naturally. I'm wondering, I have not had my coffee today, but I see your faces are kind of also distracted. I can assure you that this stuff will be useful for you in a few years. I don't know when, but it will be useful. So hopefully you had your coffee. I didn't have my coffee today. I had too much coffee the day before, and I wanted to have some rest. So anyway, forget about those external restrictions. Focus on the work and figure out what is most important for you in your path, in your career, and what your strengths are. Base your approach on your strengths and don't be afraid to experiment, especially in things like managing other people. You can experiment. We are experimenting all our lives. So how have I approached it, and what have I learned when doing this? I guess the foundations are important, and my uncles told me that my grandfather, who spent 6 or 7 years in the cavalry somewhere during the First World War, it was Russian cavalry, there was no Poland at that time, he was telling his sons, if you are a soldier, be a good soldier, because otherwise, you will get yourself killed, and you'll get the other people killed also, your colleagues. So if you are doing it, do it well. I think that that kind of had an impression on me, doing things well. There's one system of measuring our mental kind of attitude, you know, describing our things. There's one system that is called Enneagram. You can read about this on the internet if you want to. And there are 9 different types of people. Different needs, needs to succeed, needs to be needed, need to avoid pain. It turns out that my dominating type is need for perfection. That's kind of interesting. I was probably born that way, or I developed that when I was still a little kid. Anyway, if you do it well, if you do something, do it well. That's my mother's side. That's why the last name is different. So I thought, if I do this, I should do it well. Otherwise, you know, I'm wasting time. I'm going to be regretting things that I was busy with, and so it's one of the foundations. If you do something, do it well. If you don't do it well, you need to fix it, you need to correct it, etc. You are wasting time. So if you do something, do it well. Another thing, and that's me, that's my mother, was the general attitude that's very, very Christian, of course. You know, this is the most important Old Testament commandment, according to Jesus. Love yourself, your God, but also love your neighbor. It's a very important thing. And I think that was definitely a very important thing that is important in managing people. You want really the best for them. You authentically want the best for them. You are not there to exploit them, to kind of get things out of them, but you want them to do well in their careers. So I think it was definitely very important for me. I advise you also to think about it this way, because if you do it, you'll get a lot from people, and they will also support you in turn. So you can get a lot of things from people. Other inspiring things that I was definitely inspired by. Somebody told me about this when I was in my first year as a professor. A real story of a computer scientist, Jaime Escalante. He loved teaching so much that he decided to give up a well-paying job as a computer programmer and go to a high school in Los Angeles to teach. He loved teaching. It was Eastern Los Angeles, ghetto type of neighborhood with a lot of Hispanic people, girls who got pregnant at the age of 15, 16, dropouts, a lot of gangs around, and he was the one teaching there. There's a beautiful movie made about this, if you are interested in seeing the story, very inspiring. The title of the movie is Stand and Deliver. Telling that story. What he did is, in a school that didn't have computers, he came there thinking that he's going to teach programming, but there were no computers in the school. So he started teaching mathematics, and he decided to teach advanced calculus to the kids. Advanced placement calculus is, when they learn it at high school, they get exemption from it in the university. There's an exam, centrally administered. So if the kids do it, they have it easier when studying. But those kids didn't even dream about studying, most of them. They were just kids in a poor neighborhood. Amazingly, he succeeds. And he succeeds every year. It's a very inspiring story, a great teacher. And this quote comes from him. It even happened in the movie, not exactly like this, but he says that. If you expect kids to be winners as a teacher, they will raise to the occasion. So they will essentially fulfill your expectation from them. If you think they are going to be losers, they will amount to nothing, they will also do it. They will be losers. This is absolutely a quote that is working. I testify to you. It works also in case of your own children. If you expect your children to succeed, do great things, very often they will do it. If you think, well, if you are a toxic parent, if you are criticizing more than praising than teaching, the kids will also have a hard time with their careers. They will not succeed. Very inspiring thing. I heard it quite late in my life. I was probably just a few years after my PhD, so a little bit older than you are. But I definitely think it's a great thing to know the foundations. There's another story that is coming closer home to us, to Poles. When General Sosabowski was in England, and they were forming army, they were training the people, there were many young men who volunteered, who wanted to fight in the Second World War. He got, I heard that story, he got people who were not especially, they had no experience in fighting. They were not particularly well fit physically. They were pretty much not the best type of young man that you would get. But he created from them very good soldiers, very good army. There is an American movie, One Bridge Too Far, about initial days of invasion of Normandy. Sosabowski is played by Gene Hackman, a well-known American soldier, actor. They wasted a lot of his soldiers, but they were very good soldiers. And I think I invented that quote, but this is pretty much his attitude. You can make the best soldiers out of anybody, even rejects. So it's not the material that you get, but really the way you guide them. I think these quotes are very inspiring, and I definitely advise you to think about them when you lead people, when you have your own people. Here is something that I have to say that I don't fully understand yet, and I have my thoughts about this, but perhaps you can help me. I can tell you what my interpretation of it is. Here is a quote from Lao Tzu. We heard another one in this course. The wicked leader is he who the people despise. So they don't like their leader. It's like, you know, a dictator. I don't want to give any examples, but there are dictators that people don't like. You are smiling. You think about Lukashenko, maybe.
I'm from Belarus, yeah.
Yeah, many people in Belarus that don't like him. So that's a bad leader. That's a wicked leader. Right? People don't like him. He has to lead by force. Now, good leader is he who the people revere. They think he's a great leader. They really like him. And now comes the part that I don't understand fully. The great leader is he who the people say, we did it ourselves. It wasn't him or her. It's us who did it. So, explain me what is going on here. Why this? The second part is understood. Good leader is people like him. But why this? What is happening? What do you think about that?
Because he organized work of the people, so they think that everybody knew his place, mm-hmm. and they think that they don't need a leader.
I think that there's definitely something of that here. In that. Any other thoughts?
I think that you can look at the situation in the many companies, and there are leaders, and there are also bosses. And the first sentence I would say that it's not a leader, it's a boss. The one who goes around. Well, I believe that most people will despise him. But the true leader, I believe, is a person that will lead his team or his people to do something, to accomplish something. So probably a good leader or a great leader, as the first sentence says, would be a leader who led those people to do it themselves and show them the ways and give them the means to do it, maybe.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense in both things that you said. If you do it, this is what I understand from it. Again, as I said, this is an interesting thing, and I have just my interpretation. You may have another one here. It's true that he shows the way, he organizes things, people do their work. By that, there are two things that are happening, I think. One is you have less work as a leader. You can spend the time on strategic thinking, on essentially giving the direction, because you don't need to do the work, because people know what to do. Afterwards, they will say, we did it ourselves, yes? So they do the work, your people, you have less work to do. That's the first good thing. The second thing is, if you die or leave or whatever, people will continue. Your work, your company, your group, whatever you've been doing, the direction of your research will not die. Because people will have the feeling, we did it ourselves. The leader, it was very nice to have him or her, but it wasn't necessary. We did it ourselves, right? That's what I understand from this myself. That's the greatness of this leadership. But again, it's a difficult thing, so I'm not 100% sure if this is a good interpretation. But, here's another version, but the same thing, really. The same saying, another version also attributed to him. You know, computer science algorithm is essentially, when you do something, especially when you lead people, it's not a one-shot thing. You know how to do it, you do it. It's really a lot of learning. Things that don't work, things that work, you have to repeat it, observe, learn, and correct. I definitely think many things in life are like this. What is important in mentoring? So being a person who inspires other people. Well, in case of PhDs, have them move on and reach higher than you reach yourself. A good parent is not jealous of the children. The children achieve something, a good parent is not jealous of them. A good parent is happy, is proud of the children. And I think a good leader also should be proud that his or her students achieve more than the leader himself or herself. A very important thing, you know, that pride is very nice. You know, you can say, oh, I taught her and she got a Nobel Prize. You see, this is my former student. Isn't this a great reward for a teacher? Incredibly good reward, I think. I don't need to get Nobel myself because if I can say that my student got it. So you have to make it clear to them that they should reach higher. A dictator doesn't want that. A dictator will start subduing people who are smarter than he or she is. So a good leader will never do that. You also want them to give the best of themselves. And sometimes, especially when they are young, inexperienced, they don't know what they have in them. So you need to help them to see that. You need to help them to see the best in them. Again, mentorship is very similar to parenting. Very, very similar. Just, you know, different things. You have different age because you are mentoring adults. You are bringing up children. So you need to help them see that. And you remember that they have to do it themselves, like the quote said. So you should not lead them by the hand. You should leave them, give them the freedom in all kinds of things. I remember in my I have four sons. Somebody who would observe me as a parent would probably call the social services, because I would allow them to do different things. They had knives, of course, for cutting, you know, for playing in the woods when they were there. They would climb trees. That was dangerous. If they fell out of, 10 meters down, that could be really very bad. So what I did is I taught them to climb. Always 3 points. You have to be attached by three things at the same time. Move the fourth one, right? Nothing happened, luckily. In the water, again, they would do all kinds of wild things. In the sea, I would require them to wear life jackets. They were often... I remember my youngest son was going along a boat. We had a boat on the ocean. He was hardly able to keep the rail to walk, and he was walking from the front to the back on the side of the boat in waters that had also sharks and all kinds of wild fish. They have to learn it, and luckily nothing happened. They are fine. They did a lot of rock climbing later. That wasn't my initiative. But anyway, don't lead them by the hand. Because you want them to, when they become adults, you want them to be independent and you want them to be adults. The same with students. Don't lead them by the hand, but be there for them. You want them to learn a lot, and the easiest, of course, is to learn from you. So have them learn whatever you know. Give them everything that you have, that you know. Of course, they may move on to find somebody who knows more than you or knows different things. That's fine. That's really fine. Have them learn everything that there is to be learned from you. Don't withhold anything. And then they will need support. Like children, they also need support. Young people also need support. Sometimes they have questions. Sometimes they don't know what to do. They are hit by different difficult situations. So be there for them. If you remember from the lecture by Randy Pausch, last lecture, he had a problem. What did he do? He called his former advisor. He asked him, Master, Yoda, what do I do here? He got good advice. So you have to be there. When they are students, you have to support them also materially and mentally. So they need a computer. You figure out how to get a computer for them at the university. They need a room, a desk. You are there for them. Whether you are an advisor or a boss in a company, you have to also take care of your employees, of your people. All of these things are really the same when you are in a company environment. So inspire, show the possibilities, show how to do it, but let them do it by themselves. Let them be independent. You've seen this slide. In order to do well as a boss, you need to like it, of course, also. In order to be a good parent, you need to also like that. You need to like that satisfaction of being a parent, bringing up children. You need to be a scientific role model. And just like a parent, children usually, when they are small, they are really admiring their parents. When they grow bigger, they start noticing bad things in their parents. We talked about this. And then at some point, they are really rebellious. They don't want to have anything to do with the house. And that's functional, you know, they want to go out. Do make sure that they know enough, they learn enough from you by the time they are ready to go, to move on. They will learn from you a lot, good and bad things. So make sure that you are showing good things to them, the best of you. Make it worth stealing from you, stealing knowledge, of course. Don't mind it, expose yourself. They will learn more if they respect you. If they don't respect you, they will not learn much from you. So that's the same with parents, parenting. If they love you as parents, they will learn a lot from you. If they don't, they will learn less. You need to be a good scholar, a scientist, if you want to bring up good scientists yourself. And try to get the best out of yourself first, then from your people. Randy Pausch, he joked, but actually it's actually very serious, not a joke. He said, when somebody asks me to how I do it, how I become successful, he said, I tell, why don't you meet me in the library at 10 p.m. on Friday night? Essentially, he was working as hard or maybe harder than his people. In academic environments, students are often your employees, but they are also your younger colleagues. Maybe in 5 or 10 years from now, they are going to be your bosses. You never know that. This Napoleon's quote, every soldier carries a baton, general's baton in his backpack. Essentially, every soldier can become a general, and every PhD student can become a well-known, very good, famous scientist, my future boss. So I may see you somewhere in the position of a minister of higher education. That can happen. Yes? So it's very special in that respect that you have to respect your students. You have to treat them as younger colleagues, younger in terms of knowledge, I guess. Personal role model is also very important. So not only scientific, but also personal role model, because there's more in mentoring than just professional conduct. They see you making coffee, they see you drinking coffee, eating lunch, they see you giving lectures, doing other things at the university. And these are all personal things. So make sure that they also learn from you ethics, collegiality, civil service, etc. Personal interaction is important. You talk about different things. You talk about football game. You talk about whatever, politics. You talk about different things. Let them, you know, see what you think. And also learn in that respect from you. They don't have to, but they will probably learn from you. Just act naturally, be yourself, be such that they find it worth following you. If you don't want them to do unethical things or learn unethical things, that means simply don't do unethical things. Children don't do what the parents tell them to do, but they do what they see parents do. So if the parents pick their nose, the children are likely to pick their nose too. The same with mentoring. Just don't do things that you don't want them to learn. Also meet them outside of the lab. Have coffee with them, tea, take them for a walk now and then. Go on, I'll show that later. We used to do like outdoors things. We would go on a canoeing trip for a weekend. Let them see you, interact with you in different situations. This is especially in US for foreign students. There are many foreign students. And during all holidays, they don't typically go back to their country. So it's a good idea to invite them, because there are some holidays that are very family-like, like Thanksgiving, 4th of July, Independence Day. And there are holidays like this in Poland. So if there are foreign students, and if you supervise foreign students, it may be a good idea to invite them for holiday, for Christmas or something, so that they don't feel lonely. Of course, don't invite them, don't make it... Don't put pressure on them, but you can ask, what are you doing for Christmas? If you hear, well, I'm just staying in the student housing, that's a moment you can ask, would you like to join my family for Christmas? Other holidays. 4th of July, Thanksgiving are examples. There are two remarks I would like to make because of the world, the way that the world is changing. Once there was a faculty... big meeting with many faculty from the university, and there was a panel, and then one guy said something in the panel. I used to invite my students for Thanksgiving to my home or for 4th of July. I no longer do that, because what happens if they break their leg on the way to my house? Then they can sue me. They can go to court and make me responsible for breaking their leg on the way to my house. I was quite disgusted by what the guy said. I think that if I had students, a handful of students, if any of my students on the way to my house broke his or her leg and sued me, that would be the end of trust, the end of relationship, the end of advising also. I would just tell the students, sorry, I cannot advise you anymore. I lost all the trust in you. The student also could, if the student is afraid of breaking his or her leg on the way to my house, should refuse. No, I'm not going to your house because I cannot break my leg. That's the first thing. So that's kind of the modern thing in US, you know, you can sue for everything. You may have read about a woman who sued a manufacturer of microwave ovens because she baited a cat and put the cat in the microwave oven to dry the cat.
Ridiculous.
Exactly, yes. But she sued the manufacturer because there was no warning on the microwave oven. You should not put animals in there. There was another case that is more recent. A woman came to McDonald's. Both of the cases are real. This is a real story. It was drive-in, so she was driving a car in a window. She ordered coffee and put the coffee between her legs. She started driving, and somewhere on the way, maybe in the traffic, the coffee poured over her intimate parts and burned her badly. She sued McDonald's because coffee was too hot. And the ridiculous thing was that she won. I don't know about the microwave oven, but this woman really won, and because of that, coffee at McDonald's is not that hot anymore. So you can sue for anything. And that's that has been a natural tendency in US. Smart lawyers can convince you to sue for anything. So that's one thing that can disturb your relationships with your students. Another thing is related. It's the whole idea of a lot of attention to sexual harassment. So, you know, in the past, a male professor would invite a female student, why don't we go for beer, for coffee? Female student or a couple of students. Or a female professor would invite a male student. That's very, very risky these days, because if the student is unreasonable, he or she can accuse you of sexual harassment, of unwanted advances. And many people avoid closer personal contacts with students. I think it's a terrible tendency. Because of a few people who are abusing their position, the whole relationship is suffering. When I became a professor, for example, they warned me not to have meetings with my female students with closed door. So there was a couple of times a situation. A female student comes in, sits in front of my desk. When she came in, she just closed the door. I have to kind of, you know, get up, well, talking, you know, doing something, open the door. The reason why I was kind of I didn't want to make it very obvious, is that I didn't want to break the trust between us. Like saying, okay, you entered, you closed the door has to be open. Because that would essentially spoil the relationship, I think. So, you know, gently, delicately, but I did open the door so as to avoid any possibility of harassment. Later I had an office with like an aquarium in my lab. So whoever I was meeting with, everybody could see me. That was very easy. That was very nice. So those two things. And in Poland, I think we are still very reasonable. But I just wanted to tell you that it is possible that things will go in that direction. And you have to be watchful. You have to be careful with that. Both of the things that I mentioned are really disturbing in a mentoring relationship, because you do want to meet your students outside of just the professional meetings. It's part of that. You know, it's part of the whole mentoring process. You teach by example. So what does it mean? It's not that, you know, your problems are your problems. I mean, scientific problems. You essentially, you get a bad review. You send a paper, you get a bad review. Instead of kind of, you know, keeping it in yourself, you can, you know, in a meeting with students, you say, well, I got this stupid review. And then you also tell them how you handled it, how you wrote it. You can share it with them so that they see how you handle those things. They learn from you. You have to show them that you also work hard. So what Randy Pausch was saying, go and meet me in the library. Okay, here it is. And also another thing that I found, and that I took it really from my mentors. I went to my weekly meetings with Herb Simon, big guy. One of the biggest at the university, which was a good university to start with. Nobel Prize winner. You know, when you go there, you kind of, you know, you make sure that you are very well prepared and things. You sit in front of him in a room, and he, you kind of tell about your problems, what you were thinking about, how to solve it. He would do something like this. Lean back in the chair, look up and say, well, let me see this and this, and he would think aloud. When meeting with him, he would just say, you know, you saw him thinking. Why was it important? Because when I was in that situation as a student, I thought, oh, I can do that too, what he's doing, yes? Nothing, no magic there. This big guy who is walking on water, getting Nobel Prizes, he's using the same methods as that I can do. I can do that too. Very, very important, I think. So do that too. Let them hear you think, how you approach problems. That's a nice thing to do. Healthy environments. So that is important. I mean, physically healthy, but also mentally healthy environment. You need to create a place to which they go every morning in a hurry after taking shower. They are in a hurry because they want to be quickly at work. You want them to like the environment. In what respects? The space has to be clean, they have to have a desk, a computer that is fast enough, modern enough, good monitor, two monitors. But also there should be ways of making coffee and maybe a refrigerator, microwave oven to heat up lunch, etc. So make sure that they have it. And also personally, desk, but also equipment, stipend, make sure that they have enough income, be aware of any problems like this. Show interest in their personal developments, recognize their progress. When I talk with people, but when I think also about myself, I think the situations when the advisor would say something positive, would say, well, that was a really good piece of work. I like the results. Great work. These were very important moments. With parents also, praises to children work much more strongly than criticism. And I don't mean absolutely to say that with your children or with your advisees, you should always say, good work, good work, good work. That's ridiculous, of course. But when you see good work, say it. Much more eager than saying, no, that was a poor piece of work. I remember the moments when my advisor would say, I remember Van der Kolk, when I was still working on my master's thesis, he told me once, I thought you could write better. Boy, I mean, I walked around with that for a while. Of course, I started to try harder, but that criticism is, sometimes it's needed, but praises are important. So praise them whenever they deserve it. And then facilitate exchange of ideas. So, you know, in the academic environment, we talked about this in the context of networking, that in some environments people are hiding what they are doing. They are not sharing. In other environments, they are sharing everything. And there are good and bad things about the two. What you want to create is, in the lab, the environment where people share everything. So you want to have a safe environment where people are not afraid of sharing their ideas, because they will know that nobody will steal those ideas from them. So healthy interaction and exchange of ideas. I mean research, most of all. But students, when they meet, go out, they talk about everything, of course. But what I mean is the scientific research ideas. It's good to have some kind of competition, but healthy competition is one... what is healthy unhealthy competition? Unhealthy competition is that I can see that you are doing better research, so I try to kind of disturb you in doing that, so that I can do better. That's unhealthy. Hiding from you, not helping you because I want to succeed. That's unhealthy. Healthy competition is that you publish a paper, the advisor should, by the way, announce it. That's his or her role. Now, he just got a paper in a very good journal. Congratulations again, right? Now, the competition is here that you and you and you think, I want that too. Yes? So I have to work harder, smarter, to also get that prize. That's healthy competition. So you show examples and you make sure that people do feel some pressure, but it's a positive pressure. They still like him after the success. So cooperation and the competition. Cooperation so that you help each other. Imagination, creative pursuits. Sometimes the environments are toxic. Toxic in the sense of you have an idea and somebody says, nah, that's a stupid idea, or nah, that will not work. This kind of environment is toxic. We didn't have the time to talk about creativity, but that's one of the things that stifles creativity, this toxicity around. The same with parenting. You should, when children sometimes do things, like they pretend, they play, you cannot just do this. Culture can be also like this. I find with all its good things, the Dutch culture, for example, I lived there for 6 years. I think I learned it fairly well. I learned the language and the culture. There are things that I think we have, I'm more proud of our culture. Of course, there are things that they do are doing better, too. But one of the things is this suppression, this the, a little bit of toxicity. What do I mean by that? There is a saying, for example, in Dutch, behave normally if you are doing something funny, right? Something strange. Behave normally, because if you behave normally, you are funny enough. Yes? There is, in Protestant culture, for example, there is, it's forbidden to cross, I don't mean cross-dressing in the sexual sense, yeah, dressing like a woman when you are a man, but dressing and pretending to be somebody. That's also a cultural taboo in that culture. When you look at it, how many Nobel Prize winners in literature, for example, in arts, do you know that come from the Netherlands? It's a fairly large country, 14, 15 million people. I can't think of any, right? So there is a little bit of that suppression. For example, my colleague from Poland spent half a year in the Netherlands. He used to come to work to the university in his suit. So, suit attire. They started making fun of him. In a society that prides itself for its freedom, you can dress any way you like. If you can dress any way you like, why not in a suit? Yes. So small things like this. Make sure that you don't have that in your group, also in your family when you have children. Don't do things like that. Let them be who they are. Of course, it's a delicate balance between keeping them out of trouble and allowing them freedom. Keeping them out of trouble, falling off the tree, but at the same time, letting them climb the tree. Because if they don't do that, they will physically not develop well. So imagination, creative pursuits. Curiosity, when they are curious about things, research typically, but also other things, talk to them often. Sometimes they may be, we'll have a couple of people live in the middle. That's not because... he gave me a warning. It's always kind of embarrassing when people live in the middle, right? But there's going to be another person who lives earlier, at least one. Curiosity, but also in personal things. They may want to know how do you fill out the tax form, right? I can tell them. Where do you fix your car? Do you have a good mechanic? Things like that, and it's almost like a family, in many respects, like a family. Encourage them to learn a lot, take a variety of courses to promote a broad knowledge base. A variety of courses, not necessarily directly in their direction of research. Sometimes you learn much more from other courses. You notice a few times, if not in this course, then you will maybe in other courses, if you take from me, I mentioned some names like Adolf Grunbaum, Herb Simon. Simon, I took a course in psychology, cognitive psychology, as a computer scientist. Grunbaum, I took philosophy of science, a course on Freud, or philosophy and religion. I've learned from these three courses more than from many other courses in my area of research. It's often good to select impressive people, you learn from them a lot, interesting things. So encourage students to do that. So some of the things. Identify the skills that they have to learn. So this is, these things are part of the things that when I was developing this course many years ago, I was also thinking about my students at the same time. So if you want them to write papers, have them write and submit paper. Encourage them. Ask them to present their work. So we had presentations in our research group, in our weekly meetings. Reviewing, give them papers to review, because you are asked to be a reviewer. If you give them papers, you supervise them. Sometimes it's more work than when you do it yourself, but they will learn something from it. And then, later on, they may be reviewing on their own. So have them learn to review papers. Teaching, you can ask them to teach a class for you. You are traveling to a conference, ask your doctoral students, would you be willing to teach this class for me? Typically, your students are in your area, so if you teach courses in your area, it's not a difficult thing. And that's an opportunity for the students. Opportunity to learn, but also another thing. When I write a letter for a student, I can easily write Bill or Bob or Hannah taught a class for me. The feedback from the student was excellent. I think she is going to be a very good teacher when she is applying for a faculty position. So two things. You can write safely good things about that teaching, but give them the opportunity to teach. Send them to conferences so that they learn how the science works, so learn networking, present. Job hunt, make sure that they have an up-to-date CV, help them criticize it. Don't tolerate dishonesty. Never have them see you doing anything dishonest, which means don't do anything dishonest. Then they are going to learn to behave ethically. Don't accept poor quality work. Have them learn to do high quality. That's very important, high quality, because it never needs to be fixed. I had once a student who was a poor programmer. And then, you know, we have developed a program, computer program in our lab that we were giving to other people, many users, etc. If there was an error in the program, 5 years later, I knew almost certain that it was that student who did that, who caused the error, who had a bug. So you just don't accept poor quality work. Poor quality work means that you need to go back to it, fix it, and fix it, and fix it. High quality, you never need to go back to it. What we did is, I wrote a mission statement. That was inspired. I once went to a workshop in the university that was on, may have been on time management or something else, something also quite important. And then the lady who was conducting the workshop told a very inspiring story. Here is the story. FedEx. Currently, their slogan is the world on time, I think, yes? It used to be over there overnight before that. And the idea was simple. They came up with a group of people, started a company, with the following idea. Collecting letters in different parts of the United States, flying them all to one place. It was, I think, St. Louis, Missouri, or somewhere in the center of the United States. Resorting, loading on new planes, and bringing them to the destination overnight. So this all happened overnight. You deposit the letter sometime during the day, they pick it up, and they guarantee you that by 9 o'clock the next morning, the letter is in the destination, overnight. So they started the company, and things were not going too well. And at that time, you know, they got together, sat down, and invented that slogan, overnight over there. And there was apparently a story on TV where there was a reporter who saw a truck driver, a FedEx truck driver, who came to pick up mail from boxes. The boxes were in the street, in the concrete, there were screws in the concrete. There was a key to the box, you could deposit your letter in the box. They would open it up with a screw, get the letters to the truck, drive to the airport, on the plane, and etc. So there was this truck driver who came to pick up letters. He tries to open it with a key, can't open. Another key, can't open. Another tool, you know, wrench, doesn't want to open. He looks at the time, you know, he needs to make it to the airport before the plane is departing. A little bit nervous. Finally, he gets a monkey wrench, Klutschkanzusti, opens it up, unscrews it from the concrete, gets it to the truck. A problem. The box is too big for the door. He cannot get it into the truck. What he does is gets the duct tape. You know what duct tape is? They fixed Apollo 13 with it. Attaches it to the truck, quickly makes a phone call on the way for the plane to wait a few minutes, gets the letters to the plane. And then there is an interview with the reporter, with the truck driver, and the reporter asks, we've seen what you did, people have seen it, they filmed it, posted it on somewhere, and why did you do it? And the guy says, ma'am, my job was to get those letters overnight over there, I was just doing my job. So, but were you not afraid that your boss would be angry at you for unscrewing that box, taking it with you to the airport? He says, no, ma'am, because my supervisor, my boss's job was to get those letters from here to there overnight. So I was sure he would not be angry with me. And so when I heard that story, apparently not true, because, well, we don't know, but I called FedEx, the public relations, and I asked about this story. The lady I spoke to said, that's a beautiful story, but I'm afraid I have not heard about it. So I don't know, maybe it's just one of those beautiful stories that are not true, but it's a beautiful story. It inspired me to write a mission statement. Because, you know, that slogan was kind of a mission. We want to have everybody work in the same direction. Very important thing. So I wrote one, and it was very concrete. That's just very short one. It's very difficult to write short. So I wrote a mission statement that was like 4 pages. That was just the beginning, you know, the short version of it. It's a good idea. Some people remember this Covey, Steve Covey, I think. He wrote several books on self-help. He advises even to write a mission statement for a family. If you have a family, husband and wife, sit down and write a mission statement. What are we doing in this family? What are we doing in this marriage? I have never done it in the family, but it may not be a bad idea, really. I guess my wife and I are too, we agree too much to actually find some things obvious, but it's a good idea. Some people advise it for even families, but definitely for organizations, it's a good idea. You can even put concrete journal titles in the mission statement, which is what we did. Conferences that we go to, journals, etc. I can dig it up somewhere if you are interested in what I wrote there. I still have it for sure. So make sure that everybody reads it. We read it once a year during our retreat. Quiet time, you read it, suggestions, corrections, etc. Here is my lab. And by the way, I told you about this aquarium. This is my office. We got that lab. It's a very sensitive issue in universities. When you apply for a job, this is the moment where you should ask for a lab, because space is always limited in universities. We got this lab because my colleague, who was I also invited to be in the lab, he unfortunately is dead already, older than me. He used to smoke, and he went to different places in the building to smoke when it was not allowed, and he knew that place. It was a storage space, essentially. We found it, and we asked, can we have it? Then they cleaned it up for us. The dean was at that time, oh boy. When I told her about this space and brought her here, she said, oh, what a nice space. We should form a committee to allocate it to somebody. I said, no. We discovered it. We want it. So we got the space. And my office was there with the people. I had the money to buy the desks, money from grants, it was, pictures are from our retreats, you may see a few pictures in a moment. So it's good to be together. Sometimes labs, groups are such that the professor is on the third floor, the people are in different rooms. It makes a big difference to be together closely, absolutely. Carnegie Mellon is so good. Mainly because I think it's a small university where everything is neighboring. So, statistics department is on the ground floor, next to engineering and public policy, where I got my PhD from. The third floor is psychology department. It's just a few steps to go there. They are next to each other. That stimulates interaction. Small university, fewer people, it's great. If you can arrange it, try to be together with your people. Absolutely, a very good idea.
Sorry, that's just a joke. Do you have bars behind the windows?
No, these are my shelves. They are IKEA type of shelves. You know, you put them together. They are made of wires. So this is just this wall.
This looks like bars.
It looks like bars. Yes, but these are shelves.
Okay.
This is a view from inside. My people. The shelves are on this wall. So that's why you see them. These were for all kinds of not heavy enough for books, but for all kinds of cables and things. Papers. Here's one of my students. Teaching is a great way to attract people, but also to train your people. The important advice to you is, if the department does not teach a course in your area of research when you are graduated already, try to convince the department to offer a course in your area. If they don't want to do it, teach a course for free outside of your teaching duties, because this is the best way to get to know smart people. Every boss who has IQ more than single digits knows that it is critical to find the best people that is possible to find. You can see it everywhere. The better people you get, the better the whole group is going to be. So you need to have opportunity to find good people. And in academic environment, the best opportunity is to observe them in classes. One of my colleagues at the University of California at Los Angeles, Yuda Pearl, he said once, we were talking at a conference, I never accept a PhD student unless that student impresses me in a course. So he only takes the smartest, the brightest, and they have to impress him. Otherwise, it's a waste of time, he says. So finding good people, and this is a good thing, in a course, teach a course in this area, they will be exposed to it, maybe they will like it, maybe they will try to go and work with you. You need to do team building. It's important also in academic environments that your people are a team. Simple rule, a team is worth more than the sum of the individuals. In a team you can do more. So many small things like this. I told you about the competition and collaboration, share responsibilities, but also privileges. So responsibilities, cleaning up the kitchen. We had a kitchen in this. This was a wonderful lab. We had, it's not visible. Somewhere there on the left side, there's a kitchen with a sink and refrigerator. We loved it. So somebody had to clean it, because otherwise it would be dirty. So we had duties. We had duties leading a lab meeting, for example. We had a rotating position. So but there are duties, but also, of course, privileges. Teach people to give and accept criticism. We talked about this, and it is really a very important skill, that people don't get upset when they are criticized. They don't become snowflakes, because criticism is critical everywhere, especially in science. So make sure that they know how to criticize and how to accept criticism. Permanence. Some people, when they get a grant, they hire a few people, pay them from the grant. And then the grant is over, the relationship is over. That's a funny thing. I always thought about a research lab as a permanent thing. These are my students, my flock. I need to find money for them. One way or another, I will find money for them. So it's permanent. They are here until they graduate, they get their PhDs. Together, you can make better decisions. So we had weekly meetings. We made decisions together. We discussed things. And then, if needed, we voted. It was kind of risky, because as a faculty, you are responsible for financially. So I kept the right to override the voting, but I used it only once, overriding the vote. This is something that I found in Poland very, very neglected. What is the common theme between the two things? Here you see a funeral. These are US Marines, very elitary unit. They are carrying a coffin with a dead Marine. And here people are retiring. What's the common theme here? something very important. You should always make the arrival of new people and departure an event. Somebody new, you organize a coffee. On the way to the work, you buy some cookies, make coffee, and tell people at today's meeting we are going to welcome a new member. When they are leaving, also go out for lunch, coffee or something. Make it an event. Give them a present, farewell present, a card or something. Do something nice. Why do you do that? It's one thing, of course, is thankfulness. These people are thankful for the sacrifice that soldier made for the country. He was killed probably in action. Here, they are thankful to these three ladies who are retiring. That's one thing. But much more important is that both of the events are for the people who are still alive and staying. These soldiers who see that, they know that when they die, there will be a beautiful ceremony, funeral. The flag is going to be folded, given to the wife, to the family. Very moving event. Tears are going to be in everybody's eyes. So they know it. That makes them feel more of a member of that unit or that team. Here, the event is for the ladies, but actually much more important for the people here. Maybe one of them may be a boss, but the others. They know that when they leave, everybody will be thankful to them. They will get this and that. I got several things when I was retiring. One of them was a hat. I was retiring with a, I rarely buy hats with signs, but I got it as a retirement present. There are more presents in my office. Anyway, a very important thing. My wife once was working in the U.S. The guy was nuts, really. People were disappearing, almost like in some dictatorship, some communist country. Suddenly you ask, where's Bob? Oh, you don't know. He is not working here anymore, right? He went on vacation and never came back from it. And that's a very bad thing. And I notice that sometimes happens in our environment. A new person, and I meet a new face in the hallway, I don't know who it is. Make a very simple event, 1 hour long, just coffee and cookies, and introduce everybody to that person. Absolutely very, very important, I think, for building the team. And I've been fired, but they were very nice about this. Another thing is keeping relationships. So when people graduate, when they are gone, make sure that you keep in touch with them. How do you keep in touch with them? Well, they often need letters of recommendation from you. They may ask your advice. But you also can sometimes shoot them an email saying, how are you doing? We haven't heard from you, etc. If you do that, there are also physical benefits. I had a programmer who left. He started a company with his wife. That's why he left. Whenever we had bugs in the software, I asked him. 3, maybe 5 times over a period of many years, he looked back at his code and helped us. Tangible benefit. Another benefit of keeping the relationships. This is Adolf Grunbaum. I mentioned him even today. This is a guy who was a student at Lehigh University where he was working first. Many years later, so he took a course from Grunbaum and then took every single course that Grunbaum was teaching. Many years later, I don't know how many, 20 years later, he is what, 50 at most, maybe 40-something, he calls Grunbaum and says, Dr. Grunbaum, I can't hide it, I've been very successful in my career, and I owe it all to your teaching. I think that I've learned so much from you that I would like to do something nice for you. Can I buy you a house? And Grunbaum, I heard it from him directly, says, well, I have a house already. So he says, well, what else can I do? And he convinced him to donate, I think, $1 million to the Center for Philosophy of Science. And Grunbaum said, well, frankly, he could easily give a few $1 million, but he wanted to check how they are going to be managing that money. A tangible benefit that you get from keeping relationships. Another example, a master's student graduated from our school there. She was probably coming from not a very wealthy family. They offered her a stipend when she was a student. She was so thankful for that years later, as you see, she's no longer at student age. She came back and gave $300,000 to give school student stipends. Usually this kind of money is invested and then only the interest is used to give the stipends. Very nice example. I was at the ceremony where she gave that money in the name of her mother. Another thing that happens, it's a duty of a boss, is letters of recommendation. It's not that popular in Poland yet, but I cannot imagine hiring somebody without actually asking his or her previous employers, professors, how is that person? So very often people will ask you to be their reference, and then those who want to know, they will contact you to write a letter of recommendation. It's an honorable duty. You need to learn how to write strong letters. Good, positive things, very strong. It's a game. Everybody knows that the letters are going to be positive because they would not ask me to write a letter if they knew I was going to write something bad. Yes? So you pick, people pick the people who know them best, who can write the strongest letters, and you have to write strong letters. How can you write those strong letters? I told you, let the students teach so that you can write something. I've seen the student teaching, excellent teacher, etc. You cannot be indecisive as a leader. You have to be able to make decisions. When something happens, people ask, look at you, you make a decision. The only time I have overridden my lab's decision, the voting, actually, there was no voting even. There was a student whom I hired, and I had stipend for him. I had a grant. I told him to consider stopping with his full-time job outside. I was still very inexperienced. I didn't know how important it is, but I still felt it was important. I wanted him to focus precisely on the doctorate. He refused. I repeated, he still refused, he wrote me even quite an aggressive letter saying, you are my advisor, so you advise, but I'm the decision maker, so I will do whatever I want. So I told him, I don't want to be your advisor anymore. So I quit, I stopped it, saying, okay, that's it. I invited him to come to the lab to question me why I did that. He came, which was a mistake, because everybody in the lab was angry with him, actually. They criticized his attitude and his approach. So you need to be decisive. I told you about this dean saying, oh, what a nice room, like in this joke. The report is damning about the lack of leadership. I think we need to table some time, which is postponed, zamrażalka, to consider setting up a committee that will do it. Yes. So this leader clearly cannot make a decision. One thing we did also is an annual retreat. Retreat, this word in English means, in a religious context, we also use retreat for recollection. But it is used a lot in any environment. Retreat is just, you know, taking distance from your work, going somewhere for a weekend, for a few hours, for a whole day, to talk about important things. So that's what we did also. Once a year we went away somewhere in nature. In US there are national parks, state parks. You can rent a cabin where you can sleep together. There's a kitchen, you can cook, you can talk. Go for a walk. So that's a picture from one of the retreats. That's me somewhere here. But not long ago because I had my new hairstyle there. So what you do is really spend time together, doing relaxing things like cooking, walking, horse riding, but also talking about what is happening in the lab. Here are two other pictures from horse riding, once a canoe weekend. So we did things like that. It may be difficult to do, but it's not that terribly easy to organize a picnic somewhere with your people, especially if you have a handful. If you are a big professor and have a house with a with a big garden, you can invite them for a campfire there or something. You can do things like this, just to spend time together. I created a laboratory. That's another thing. I invented a time tense. You know, tense like present, past, future tense. I invented a tense in English. Past, future, past perfect, I think I called it. In Polish, I would say czas zaprzeszły dokonany. An example in English would be may I have already done something? In Polish, I would say czy mogłem już zrobiłem coś? It's of course a joke. What I mean is I do something and then I don't ask permission for it. So I created a lab. I named it. I created a web page. And then I remember the dean once met with me having coffee or in the hallway and said, oh, I've seen that you created a lab. I said, yeah. Well, that was the end, you know. That was the end of the conversation. So I created a lab, gave it a name, some organization. It's really important to give structure. In every place, you need structure. Successful environments are those where people, even in the most difficult conditions, when there is structure. If you read about Cardinal Wyszyński, when he was imprisoned, there was a priest and a nun with him. He immediately imposed a structure. Mass at 6 o'clock, cleaning, individual prayer, this and that. 7 o'clock in the evening mass, then we go to sleep. I just heard recently about a father of a famous lawyer in Poland. The name will pop up, sorry. His father was in officers' camp during the Second World War. They had no time, because all the time there were lectures. He learned 5 languages, foreign languages in that camp. Just, you know, do things that are busy, make you busy. In Ravensbrück, Countess Lanskoronska was giving lectures on Michelangelo. Again, to take the mind of the women there from the camp, from the war. So you organize things, social events, weekly meetings, Friday 12 o'clock, lunch meeting, day-to-day tasks, responsibility, organization, who is cleaning the kitchen, who is leading the meeting, rotating position of the chair of the meeting. Mission statement was the most important document guiding us, and the mission statement could be changed also. Usually we did that once a year, we looked at it together. Veto, I mentioned to you, I did it once. Sharing of the work, you may have seen this picture. If not, then I would, it would be next week in the time organization. Sharing their work. This picture is in many languages. Many, as they say in English, many chiefs, not enough Indians. So many, many bosses, not enough workers. Documents, mission statement. I actually wrote 2 other documents. I noticed that students came to to meetings with me unprepared. So I wrote a 1-page document, something about the meetings. Cancellation, if you cannot come, no, let me know as early as possible, etc., etc. So another policy was working hours. Working hours was where should you work, should you come to the office, be there. The policy said essentially you can work anywhere you want. And people work in different places. One of my people worked at nights. He stopped later. I don't think it was very healthy for him to work like until 5 a.m. then go to bed and sleep during the day. I sometimes work in a coffee shop, that noise doesn't disturb me. So the policy said essentially you can work anywhere you want. Just come to the lab meetings to individual meetings. We had the real products that made a big difference. And I also brought myself to the level of doctoral students. So, you know, the chair of the meeting was rotating, I was just one of the participants. If the chair told me to keep quiet, I have to keep quiet. So I was just at the level of the students. In US, it's more common to use first name when talking to each other. So we were all on the first name basis. That was a somewhat risky idea. There were good and bad things about it, but more good, definitely more good things came. Output is the main goal, so you can work wherever you want, essentially. That's full flexibility. The story of a guy who did nothing. That's creativity thing. I don't know if it's a real story, but it's beautiful. I wish it were real. Ford, Henry Ford, hired a consultant to look at his factory and see if there is anything that could be improved. That's a good investment, by the way. You pay a guy a few thousand dollars for a few days of work, and the savings that the guy can bring you are may be very large. So the guy came and he looked around, he talked to people, spent a few days talking to different people, making notes, building models, and then he came to Ford and said, "Mr. Ford, your company is so efficient that I don't really see any opportunities for improvement. Everybody knows what to do. The production line is a great invention, very efficient. So I'm sorry, but I cannot tell you really much. But there is one guy, one person, one employee who can be easily fired. Because every time I went to him, he said, and asked him what he was doing, he said, I'm doing nothing." Ford made sure that they talk about the same guy, the guy in the corner office, southwestern corner, etc. Yeah, the same guy. Ford said, "I'm sorry, but I cannot fire him. This guy, with his ideas, brought me over $300,000 savings. 300,000 early 20th century, you know, these are millions today. With his great ideas, he brought me so much savings. And he has his best ideas when he does nothing." Remember about this. Sometimes you need to give people time, give them some freedom, not complete, not enough, not too much, but it's a good idea. Another thing that is, I think, a good idea, we had the funds that I could manage myself. Every grant had overhead, so from every grant that I had, I got, say, 3% of that money to me. I could, of course, not in my pocket, but I could buy things from it, like desks for my people. So I would do, first time somebody publishes a paper, I would buy an iPhone, for example, for that person. Or an iPad, or something nice that appreciated the effort. That was a very nice thing, very inexpensive, very, really, in the big picture, small money, but a nice thing. Isn't it nice to get something in appreciation of your work? Bad things, the last part. I think we should still be okay. Oh, no, but 5 minutes only. As a young faculty, you are usually very dispersed to have students. You know, you go to a conference, and then you say, "Oh, here's my PhD student." That's such a nice thing, you know. You are so grown up and big that you have your own students. So that makes very, you know, young people, especially when you graduate, very desperate to have students. That's a mistake. Don't, and you know, you do everything for them, you know, you want them to be happy, to develop, etc. You do too many, many things for them. Don't do it. Much better is to get money, then you have money to pay them stipend. They are your employee. There is a little bit of pressure, you know. There is, you are their boss also, not just a buddy. Many of these students, nothing came out of them. But here, it was much better. When they want you, when they want to work with you, initially I would say, "Oh, sure, come on, I will supervise you." Today I'm very, very selective. As I may have mentioned, I don't accept students who work full-time. Sorry, that's me, that's my thing. You cannot do two things well at the same time, so other faculty do it. I don't do that. And I learned it already there, and it was confirmed in Poland also. Nothing came out of people I supervised who were also, their mind was somewhere else. It's a waste of time, really, in both places. So do things for your trainees, but don't overdo it. The initial desperation is really bad. Space, I told you, in the beginning, when you get the job, this is the moment you should ask for space, if possible, because later they will do it like in the joke. Labrador, this is a race of a dog, abbreviated lab, the same word as laboratory. So negotiate it. It's a sensitive issue. There's always not enough space, so you have to be considerate to other people. Don't be too brutal. Administration. Everywhere in the world, there are bureaucrats, and sometimes they think that they are the most important people in the university. the thing that worked best for me always is just nice smile, very, you know, coming to them, smiling, very polite. That usually works. If that doesn't work, then sometimes you have to remind them politely that they are there for the students and for the faculty. It's not that they are the kings here. Sometimes bureaucrats think that they are the most important thing around. So, but usually just personal charm works. Know how to refuse administrative duties. There are many things that you will be asked to do as a faculty. Here is the list, various functions, honorable things. Make sure that you know how to refuse. Sometimes you decline these things because there will be too many for you. If there are problems in a student, recognize them early. If there is a student, motivation, there are personal problems, other plans than doing science, recognize it early and then try to solve it. Sometimes, you know, maybe a good idea to even give up if you think nothing will come out of it. Freedom of time and place sometimes backfire. If you give complete freedom, the student doesn't even show up. Well, what is this? Don't wait too long. Talk also about decreased performance if you see that. If things don't work out, it's okay to give up, to kind of politely, and I haven't had many cases like this, but sometimes it definitely happens. In the beginning, students are often take courses, read a lot instead of doing research. It's a good idea to start doing research from the very, very beginning. In our lab, we had the first year paper in the lab because the department was still behind us. They didn't have that hurdle. We introduced it in the lab. Responsibilities, everybody should have some things like cleaning the lab and stuff. And a few things, I don't have the time to talk about them. Of course, the slides are... I made some changes, so I put the new version tonight along with the recording. There are other materials that are useful. There is a book that I like a lot. There's a short paper that you may read, How to Be a Good Student, Good Advisor. The books by Feynman, two books, excellent. You are all going to become scientists. Read those two books because they are very, very nice, really. They are translated into Polish, I'm pretty sure. Concluding remarks. Being mentor is fun. It's 5:30. I should finish for you. Next week, balancing your life and dealing with stress. So those two topics together. I know that you ask about that. So hopefully I will say something interesting. Thank you very much. See you next week.
Thank you.
The list, you have passed somewhere the list, the presents.